Okay. I'll call the Tuesday, March 17th, St. Patrick's Day meeting of the Senate Committee on Rules to order. And members, we have several resolutions to take up today, and we have two legislators with us. So I think we'll take their issues up first, and I will begin by opening a public hearing and work session on Senate Resolution 2. I believe that Senator Shields would like to come forward. Good afternoon, Senator Shields. I think this might be your first appearance in front of the Senate Rules Committee this session.
I mustn't have made a very good impression, Madam Chair, because I was
here
about
before?
A week and a half ago.
Oh, I apologize. Well, welcome back, then.
It was that stirring testimony that I gave, I'm sure. Chair Rosenbaum, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Chip Shields, and I represent North and Northeast Portland in the Oregon State Senate, District 22. I want to thank you for hearing Senate Resolution 2 today, honoring Geneva Knowles. Ms. Knowles was a pillar of the North Portland business community and also a pillar of North and Northeast Portland generally. In 1962, she began her career at Cash and Maxie's Barbershop as one of the only a handful of female barbers in Portland. She married Paul Knowles in 1965, and they started an amazing lifetime partnership. Ms. Knowles and Mr. Knowles opened their own barbershop, Geneva's Sheer Perfection Barber and Beauty Salon, an institute in North Portland that is still open 7 days a week with 13 employees. And incidentally, it's where I get my hair cut as well. And believe it or not, I actually have a barber, her stepson, Paul Knowles Jr. Ms. Knowles and Mr. and Mrs. Knowles also owned and operated the Cotton Club, a infamous Portland night spot that has had some amazing figures come through there, like Buddy Guy and some other well-known blues and rock and roll musicians over the years. And it was the place to be when you came through Portland. And they also owned Paul and Geneva's Restaurant and Lounge, two clubs that became staples in the African-American community in North and Northeast Portland. Ms. Knowles was a member of the Urban League, New Baptist Church, and Bubbling Brown Sugars Social Club, and won many business awards, including the Business Excellence Award and the Delta Sigma Theta Sorority Women of Excellence Award. Ms. Knowles sadly passed on December 20, 2014, but she is a luminary in our community that will be remembered for her support of so many grassroots projects and organizations and to the benefit of the entire North Northeast Portland community. So thank you for hearing this, and I urge your support of Senate Resolution 2.
Well, thank you, Senator Shields, for bringing it to us, and I certainly have heard of her and a lot of these fine establishments. I think they were known for being musical venues, right?
Absolutely, yeah. Yes.
Any questions for Senator Shields? Okay, I don't see any. So thank you
again.
Thank
you, Madam Chair.
And we are in a work session, and we don't have our vice chair here, so perhaps Senator Boquist.
Madam Chair, I move SCR 2 to the floor with a do adopt.
Senator Boquist has moved Senate Resolution 2 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation. Is there any discussion on the motion?
Other than Senator Shields obviously wants to carry it.
I think so. Any objection to the motion?
No.
Okay, the motion carries. And we will ask Senator Shields to be our carrier, and I'll close the public hearing and work session on SR2. And next, can we open all of these at the same time? Okay. I am going to open a public hearing and work session on House Concurrent Resolution 5, House Concurrent Resolution 6, and House Concurrent Resolution 7. And Erin, would you like to tell us about these?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. House Concurrent Resolution 5 honors Coach Danny J. Miles for his career and achievements. House Concurrent Resolution 6 honors William Bill Kittredge for his role as an influential leader in early years of Oregon statehood. And HCR 7 honors Oregon pioneer, author, and activist Abigail Scott Dunaway.
Thank you, Erin. And I see that Senator Whitsitt is here, if you'd like to come forward. Looks like you are the Senate chief sponsor on all of these, so we'll look forward to hearing your testimony on them.
Thank you, Chair Rosenbaum, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Senator Doug Whitsitt. I represent Senate District 28. which is Klamath, Crook, and most of Lake Jackson and Deschutes counties. With me today is Representative Whitsitt's legislative assistant, Kelsey Ferries. With your permission, I will present for HCR 5 and HCR 6, and Kelsey will do HCR 7. So, Danny Miles is an Oregon athlete, sportsman, educator, and the second most winning coach in the history of American basketball. He was an outstanding three-sport athlete with the Medford Black Tornado, being named the high school's outstanding athlete for 1963. At Southern Oregon University, Danny earned All-American honors as her football quarterback, All-Conference as a basketball point guard, and All-District in baseball. Miles still holds the 77.9% All-Divisions pass completion record that he set as a sophomore at Southern Oregon when he led the nation in total offense in 1965. You might think that Danny Miles is like a 6'4" Athenian male. Danny's more like 5'7", pushing 5'8", and might have weighed 150 pounds. But he was a, like I said, he led the nation as a sophomore in, as a quarterback, and his record still stands. Danny has been head coach of the Oregon Tech Hustling Owls for 44 consecutive seasons. His teams have won more than 7 out of every 10 games that he has coached. The university renamed their basketball court the Danny Miles Court after his team won their 500th game in December 1995. February 1, 2014, his team won their 1,000th game, making Coach Miles only the second men's basketball coach at any four-year university at any level to reach the 1,000-win plateau. His teams won national NAIA championships in 2004, 2008, and again in 2012 in a season when the Hustling Owls won 34 games. His teams have also finished second and third at the national tournament, traveling to two more Elite Eights, won 14 district or conference titles, and have been ranked in the NAIA Top 20 on 30 occasions. He was named NAIA Coach of the Year in 2004 and 2008, and the American Basketball Coach of the Year in 2012. Coach Miles' teams have won nearly as many sportsmanship awards. You almost never see a Miles coach player jawing at an official. You will never see it happen a second time. For instance, in 2008, when they won it all at the national tournament, they also brought back the team sportsmanship trophy, voted upon and awarded by the other tournament players. More important than all of this to Coach Miles is the scholarship of his athletes. His players often study engineering, physics, laser optics, and other pushover majors. It is widely known that if an Oregon Tech player does not maintain at least a three-point grade point average, their minutes played on the court will be few, if any. Although no one keeps the records, I have no doubt that Danny Miles has coached more academic All-Americans than any other basketball coach in the history of the game. The Hustling Owls experienced a rare losing season this year. The team lost 9 games on the last possession of the game to 4 teams that are now playing in the NAIA tournament. Miles has announced that the 2015-16 will be his last year as head coach at Oregon Tech. Virtually all of Danny's players are coming back. There are very few who will be willing to bet against his Hustling Owls making yet another run toward a tournament championship in the next leap year, which is 2016. Coach Miles has 5 children with his wife and lifelong companion, an unabashed fan. They hope to relax and participate in seeing their 19 grandchildren growing into adults. And I'm sure this couple is truly a class act and worthy of this joint resolution. Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Whitsitt. Why don't we just keep going and then we can act on these
when
we've taken the testimony.
HCR 6 honors William Bill Kit Kittredge, who is an icon of Eastern Oregon ranching. He created one of the West's greatest farming and ranching empires through hard work, grit, determination, and business ability. The son of pioneering parents, Bill Kit had no formal education. He started on his own as a 16-year-old, $25 a month hired hand on a Silver ranch. He saved enough money to purchase a hardscrabble 40-acre parcel of dusty sand dunes near Sand Springs. He stocked his tiny ranch with a few heifers that he took in lieu of wages. From that meager beginning, Bill Kitt built an unprecedented farming and ranching enterprise that spread over three states and six counties. At the time of his death in 1958, he owned 68,000 acres, ranches encompassing over 100 square miles of deeded land. His land included 34,500 acres of irrigated cropland and 33,500 acres of pasture land. Kit leased another 52,000 acres, as well as holding grazing permits on 850,000 acres of BLM land. All told, his legendary MC Ranch encompassed nearly 1 million acres, more than 1,500 square miles. His ranches were stocked with more than 1,900 mother cows, all one iron, homegrown cattle. Bill Kitt was more than just a successful businessman. He was a trailblazer in the farming and ranching community, a mentor, an advisor, and a leader of the state and national cattle industry. He served as Oregon president of the Oregon Cattlemen's Association, director of the National Cattlemen's Association, vice president of the Pacific States Livestock Marketing Association, and a director of the Tri-State Livestock Credit Corporation. One of Bill Kitt's proudest achievements was founding and serving as president for many years of the Klamath Production Credit Association, an agricultural bank formed to provide loans to farmers and ranchers who were losing their properties due to lack of credit during the Great Depression. Bill Kitt was truly a self-made man who, from modest beginnings as a day worker, became one of the most successful ranchers in the West. He was a man of great vision who took risks, exhibited extraordinary efforts to succeed under harsh and difficult circumstances, and never lost sight of his humble beginnings. The legacy of his MC Ranch is very much alive today. His nephew, Jack Nickel, the gentleman who took the reins of the Bill Kitt empire when he died, and his grandniece, Amy Thompson, have created the MC Chuck Wagon Western Heritage Museum in downtown Lakeview, along with funding a foundation that will perpetuate Kitt's memory indefinitely. Bill Kitt's accomplishments are a testament to American exceptionalism. His life clearly demonstrated that anyone, even from the most humble beginnings, through hard work and determination, can succeed beyond their wildest dreams. We believe that his life and accomplishments are more than worthy of this memorial resolution. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Senator Whitsitt. Any questions? Okay, I don't see any. So thank you for your testimony. And that brings us to HCR 7.
Madam Chair, committee members, Kelsey Ferry, Legislative Assistant for Representative Whitsitt. Abigail Jane Scott was born in Illinois in 1934 when she was 17 years old. Her life dramatically changed with the death of her mother and brother during the family's grueling trek to Oregon in an ox-drawn cart. Abigail's family settled in Lafayette, Oregon, where she began a career as a school teacher. Just 1 year later, she married Benjamin C. Dunaway. Four children promptly followed, spaced less than 2 years apart. By 1859, Dunaway filled her days caring for children and farm chores. She found time in the late evenings to pen her first novel, Captain Gray's Company. Her writing skills literally kept the family afloat when Benjamin suffered a crippling accident and lost the farm. Abigail was now the breadwinner and returned to teaching as well as running a hat shop in Albany, Oregon. It moved to Portland in 1871, offered the family a new start. The women's rights movement was small but active in Portland, and Dunaway decided that a women's newspaper would offer income as well as a valuable outlet for her writing talents. She found the new Northwest during her first year in Portland. After an inspiring visit from national suffrage leader Susan B. Anthony, politics, fiction, fashion, and domestic advice filled the pages of the very popular new publication, which Dunaway edited for the next 16 years. She found time to lecture on temperance and women's rights as well and was active in the Portland's Women's Club. Dunaway's reputation grew throughout the entire region with speaking engagements pouring in as far away as Idaho City, Boise, and Lewiston, Washington. National suffrage leaders called on her to serve as the vice president in the National Women's Suffrage Association in 1884. Dunaway's suffrage work and Northwest soon put her in conflict with the national suffrage and temperance movement leaders. She wanted outside organizers to stay out, believing the alignment male supporters because they did not understand local conditions. Traveling some 12,000 miles and giving more than 140 lectures, Dunaway turned her full attention to the Idaho campaign. With local women taking charge, Dunaway led the suffrage referendum campaign in Idaho to victory in 1896. She helped mastermind the campaign to victory in Washington State as well in 1910. Dunaway's efforts to win the right to vote in her home state of Oregon proved much more demanding. From 1884 to 1910, Oregon's male voters defeated suffrage 5 times at the poll. Ironically, Dunaway's own brother, the influential publisher of the Oregonian, editorialized against every suffrage major. And finally, in 1911, Dunaway and her forces mustered the courage to take the issue before the intransigent voters one last time. She led the Oregon Equal Suffrage Association to victory at the polls in 1912. On November 30th, 1912, Dunaway signed Oregon's suffrage proclamation and became the first woman in her state to register to vote. Dunaway's remarkable career as a journalist, lecturer, and suffrage organizer ended when she died in 1915. Her autobiography, Pathbreaking, remains a powerful memoir of her 40 years of service to women's rights. And also, she was just with the Oregon Heritage in D.C. She was chosen to have her statue in the hall.
Great. I didn't know that choice had been made, but that's great.
Yes.
Okay, any questions?
No, my wife has played this woman 2 or 3 times.
Wow. Okay, great. And Senator Whitsitt, did you want to be the carrier on all of these? Or
I think Senator Winters is going to carry Abigail Scott Dunaway.
Okay, great. And the other two, you will? Okay, terrific. Okay, well, thank you for your testimony. And Senator Farrioli, Vice Chair Farrioli, we did open a work session on these three, so.
Madam Chair, I'm prepared to make a multiple motion.
Ah, okay, well, let's do that then.
Madam Chair, I move that HCR 5, 6, and 7 be sent to the floor with a be adopted recommendation.
Senator Farrioli has moved HCR 5 to the floor with the. Oh, 7. Oh, 5, 6, and 7. To the floor with a be adopted recommendation. Is there any discussion on the motion? Any objection to the motion? Okay, the motion carries. And we will ask Senator Whitsitt to be the carrier on HCR 5 and HCR 7, and Senator Winters to be the carrier, on HCR 5 and HCR 6, Senator Whitsitt, and then Senator.
Madam Chair, I am anxious to see Senator Whitsitt carry the Abigail Scott Dunaway Memorial.
I think perhaps, that would be wonderfully perhaps appropriate. Perhaps he'll favor us.
I would love to,
some
but
comments.
I'd have to wrestle the gentlelady from Salem.
I'm betting on the gentlelady.
Okay, so I will close the public hearing and work session on HCR 5, HCR 6, and HCR 7. And
thank you, Chair Rosenbaum.
Okay, next I'll open a public hearing and work session on Senate Concurrent Resolution 8. And yes, you can come forward. And then we'll ask Erin just briefly to tell us what we have here.
And Madam Chair, members of the committee, you have SCR 8 honors Blaine Whipple, 1930 to 2015. You do have a -1 amendment. It just modifies the resolution and identifies contributions made while serving as state senator during the 1975 and 1977 legislative sessions. We have no revenue, no fiscal on the -1 amendment.
Okay, and we have Blaine Scott Whipple as well as Judith Steele. Did you both want to come forward? Then we'll ask Scott to go ahead with his testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, members of the committee. For allowing me to speak on behalf of Senate Resolution 8. As you heard, my name is Blaine Scott Whipple. Blaine Whipple is my father. He was active in politics throughout his life, specifically serving in the Oregon Senate in the 1975 and 1977 sessions. He died on January 3, 2015. While not everyone agreed with the position of my father while he served as senator, you'd be hard-pressed to find anyone who served with him to say they didn't know where he stood on the issues. Blaine Whipple believed strongly in an open and transparent government and voted what he believed was best for Oregonians, not based on what was crafted during backroom negotiations. Just a few examples of the legislation that Blaine Whipple worked on is legislation to allow Oregonians, or I shouldn't say allow, require that Oregonians receive interest to be paid if a mortgage company held money in escrow for taxes and insurance reserves. He sponsored legislation that prohibited the state from taxing Oregonians' 1974 federal income tax rebates. He championed legislation to support and promote Oregonians with disabilities, and he worked on a number of other pieces of legislation while he served as Oregon senator. For those reasons and other, I believe that Blaine Whipple was a good servant for Oregon, and I personally thank you for considering recognizing his service, which I believe is worthy of your recognition. Thank you.
Thank you, Scott, for your testimony. Do we have any questions? Okay, I don't see any questions, so thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
And members, I'll note that not only is every member of this committee a sponsor of this resolution, but every member of the Senate and many members of the House are also sponsors. I did not have the honor of knowing former Senator Whipple, but I do know the family, in particular Judith Steele, and I know that he was a remarkable man and was a sudden, untimely loss, and we are very glad to be able to give him the Senate's highest honor in this way. So we'll look forward to seeing you again when we have this on the floor. And Senator Farioli, we are in a work session.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move that we adopt the Dash 1 amendments to SCR 8.
Okay, Senator Farioli has moved to adopt the Dash 1 amendment to Senate Concurrent Resolution 8. Is there any discussion? Yeah. Any objection? Okay, the amendment is adopted. Okay. Senator Farioli?
Madam Chair, I move SCR 8 is adopted to the floor with a B adopted. I'm sorry, misspoke myself. Madam Chair, I move SCR 8 as amended to the floor with a B adopted recommendation.
Thank you. Senator Farioli moves Senate Concurrent Resolution 8 to the floor as amended with a B adopted, or rather with the be adopted as amended recommendation. Is there any discussion on the motion? Any objection to the motion? The motion carries, and it would be my honor to carry this on the floor. And so we will do that and close the work session on SCR 8. And that one? Yeah. Okay. Next, I'll open a public hearing and work session on House Concurrent Resolution 14. And Erin, do you want to tell us about that?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. House Concurrent Resolution 14 designates March 26, 2015 as Purple Day to raise awareness of epilepsy. We have no revenue, no fiscal impact on the resolution.
Okay, thank you. Erin, it looks like we have three people signed up to testify, so I'll call all of them. It's Nicole Pommetier, Ray Lynn Stewart, and Jennifer Natzel. If the three of you would all like to come forward.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, Nicole Pommetier here today on behalf of Sunovion Pharmaceuticals. We have been very pleased to work with the Epilepsy Foundation on this House concurrent resolution that's before you today. While today is all about green, we are actually here to talk about purple today in honor of epilepsy recognition. Testimony from our sponsors, Senator Winters and Representative Kenny Geyer, is on OLIS that you can refer to, and we appreciate your consideration. Thank you.
Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for this honor today. My name is Jennifer Natzel. I am from Troutdale, and I work with the Epilepsy Foundation as a Hope volunteer. I support the resolution currently before the committee today, which would designate March 26, 2015 as Purple Day in Oregon in support of expanding awareness of epilepsy in our state. Epilepsy has been defined in the past as two or more unprovoked seizures, more than 24 hours apart, but it is much more complicated than that. Terms and conditions are always being refined in an effort to better understand and bring a better understanding to this disease. My son Blake was diagnosed with epilepsy September 24th, 2013, at the age of six, after having two clonic tonic seizures on that day. This was both a blessing for my family and heartbreaking. I finally had the explanations we were looking for, but his life changed forever. My son typically has what they call atypical seizures, meaning that he doesn't usually convulse. As a result, he tends to act odd, often like he's intoxicated. These seizures, coupled with the location being difficult to find on an EEG, makes a normally easy diagnosis very difficult. It took us two long years to find out what was wrong with my son. Blake is now seven. He's currently on his fourth medication. He's had horrible reactions in the past to the last ones, including possibly life-threatening rashes, severe and dangerous impulsions and anger, and severe depression. There's been a few times he's made statements like, "I wish I was dead," and "God hates me, that's why he gave me epilepsy." Blake's epilepsy is located in the frontal lobe of his brain. This has caused many comorbid conditions, including severe ADHD, anxiety, and sensory issues. This makes simple things like going to the grocery store, out to dinner, or even on a family vacation very difficult. Even finding affordable childcare is a much challenge. Blake's future is unknown to me, and I get very sad to think about what he may lose as a result. All of the things we hope for our children are forever changed. Things like going off to college and having a family of his own one day. Blake loves space, and before diagnosis, he wanted to become an astronaut, and this is something I know he'll never be able to do. I was very grateful to find the Epilepsy Foundation and begin attending a support group for parents. As I watched my son's personality fall apart, I was completely lost. Their kind words to me were, "We understand." They still echo in my mind. It was the first time I had ever had somebody tell me that. This morning, I told my son I was coming here to testify today, and I asked him if he wanted me to tell you anything about what it's like having epilepsy. And excuse this, he's only seven, but he told me to tell you that it sucks. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your testimony.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I actually work for the Epilepsy Foundation Northwest. So,
can you say your name? I'm sorry.
Raylynn Stewart. Thanks.
Thanks.
So I actually do work for the Epilepsy Foundation Northwest. I've been involved for several years now, was board president and on the board for 5 years, and now I work for the foundation 4 years. And I, too, am a parent of a child. You heard an extreme testimony. On the other hand, there are people that don't have it as extreme, but I do hear these stories every day, as Jennifer testified to. My daughter is 18 now. She is graduating from Sunset High School in Beaverton this year and will be going off to college. Although we do live with, she's at the highest risk for sudden unexplained death of epilepsy. So we live every day just, you know, she goes to bed and I never know if she's going to wake up because of her generalized tonic-clonic seizures. So this is something that I do take a lot of pride in, going out and educating and making communities and people aware. So having March 26th, 2015 designated as Epilepsy Awareness Day, Purple Day, is so significant to our family, to the foundation, and to many other families. So I'm very excited to be here and to be part of this, and really appreciate you hearing testimony on this.
Okay, well, thank you, all three of you, for your testimony. Did we have any questions? Okay, I don't see any questions for you. I do see a handsome young man in the audience. Though. Is he connected with one of you?
He is. He is mine, and he...
What's his name?
Keenan Apperson, and he is the little brother of my daughter who has epilepsy.
Great. So. Well, thanks, Keenan, for being here to support your mom and your sister today. We're really pleased that you're here.
She wished she could be here.
I'm sure she does. Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you
for bringing this to us. And Senator Farrioli, we're in a work session.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move HCR 14 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation.
Thank you. Senator Farrioli has moved HCR 14 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation. Is there any discussion on the motion? Any objection to the motion? Motion carries. I see that Senator Winters is the chief sponsor on the Senate side, so we'll ask her to carry this one, and we'll close the public hearing and work session on HCR 14. And that brings us to open a public hearing and work session on Senate Concurrent Resolution 9. And Erin, would you tell us about this one?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. SCR 9 recognizes Portland Winterhawks for 4 consecutive Winter Conference championships. We have no revenue, no fiscal impact on the resolution.
Okay, and I see that we do have someone who's come forward to testify, and I'll ask her to introduce herself for the record and give us her testimony.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Molly Woon, and I work in the Senate Majority Office here in Salem. I live in Portland, Oregon, and I'm here in my unofficial capacity as a Winterhawks fan. SCR 9 recognizes the Winterhawks for their 4 concurrent Western Conference championships through 2011, 2014. The Winterhawks, they're only the 4th team since 1966 to accomplish this in the Western Hockey League. This team has been in Portland and in Oregon for nearly 40 years, involved in a number of charitable activities, going to schools and teaching kids about hockey and physical education. They have a huge fan base, including many fans here in the Capitol building. And they are currently in their last week of regular season play. They have secured home ice rink advantage next week and will be hosting as of yet undetermined opponent. So it is possible by the time this resolution makes it through the building, if it is to make it through the building, we might have a 5th championship. I don't know yet. But the resolution explains, you know, many of the merits of the Winterhawks, and I would encourage, thank you for your support, and encourage your approval of SCR 9. Thank you.
Great. Well, that's exciting to hear that they're still in the running and maybe going pretty far. So we will hope for that to happen. Did we have any questions?
No. It used to be one of the most penalized teams in the league. Great team to watch, though, back then.
Okay. Anybody else? I don't see any, so thank you for your testimony. Was there anybody other than me that wanted to carry this?
I haven't talked to Senator Riley, but I do know he used to be a season ticket holder.
Oh.
I think he would probably be interested.
Okay, we'll ask him to do that then. Okay, so we are in a work session. Senator Farrioli.
Madam Chair, just under the issue of discussion, I heard the proponent say that she was very proud of the 4 consecutive championships, but that she thought the 5th was in doubt. Madam Chair, I think this means that this is not a true hockey fan, not a true Winterhawks advocate, because we know they're going to go 5.
Uh-huh.
You know. All right, Madam Chair, back to the motion. Madam Chair, I move SCR 9 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation.
Thank you, Senator Farrioli. Has
5 and
SCR 9 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation. Is there any discussion on the motion? Any objection to the motion? Okay, the motion carries. We will ask Senator Riley to carry on the floor unless Senator Farioli wants to.
Senator Riley is the appropriate choice.
Okay, great. So that's what we'll do.
Keep him in the penalty box.
And I'll close the public hearing and work session on SCR 9. Members, we were not sure. I think have we by now posted our agenda for Thursday?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, we do not have an agenda for Thursday, so we will not be
meeting.
So
we aren't meeting on Thursday.
We will be back here next Tuesday, though.
We'll be here next week, and then on the 26th, we will be doing executive appointments.
Correct.
That will be the group of executive appointments that we had previously. The new governor has signed up on those, and so we will be hearing from those folks that we didn't, the couple that we already heard from. Other than that, we'll hear from everybody else next week. Okay, and members, thank you for your time and
Madam
attention.
Chair,
yes, Senator Farioli.
I would like to ask you to suspend the rules and reopen the work session
on definitely.
SCR 2. If I might
yes,
ask, for the purpose of casting my vote.
Yes, Senator Farioli.
It will not change the outcome.
Has requested that we suspend the rules to allow him to vote on SR 2. Is there any objection?
Well,
Senator Boquist.
No.
Okay, the rules are suspended. Senator Farioli, how do you vote?
Madam Chair, I move for immediate sine die. Oh, I'm sorry.
That motion might be well received, but is unfortunately out of order.
Different motion. Madam Chair, I would like to cast an aye vote on SR2 in memoriam of Geneva Knolls, is that pronounced correctly?
Okay, we'll record your aye vote on Senate Resolution 2. And that, and now do I didn't actually open a work session.
We suspended the rules.
But we suspended the rules, so I'll close our work session. And you voted on everything else.
Yes, ma'am, I did.
Great. Okay, and that completes our agenda for today. Members, thank you again for your time and attention.
Yes.
We are adjourned.
Thank you again
for your time and attention.
Yes.
We are adjourned.